The following is the National Radio Club business meeting held during the 1992 National Radio Club Convention in Omaha, Nebraska.
Before we get too far, I have a presentation to make. I got surprised by getting the one at the banquet, so I have one to make here tonight to a member of the club who the Big O team feels did most of the work in the change of operation from Milwaukee. And so tonight, the Big O team wants to give a Nebraska plaque to what we feel is the number one man in the club, Ken Chatterton.
Well, you're not going to get much of a speech, but I certainly do appreciate it.
Make sure you get his best side.
There is no best side. I certainly appreciate this, but I do want to remind you that it's not one man. I've had quite a team that's been working with me. Ernie pulled me out of a real tough spot. So did Wayne. Paul and Fred have been wonderful to work with, and without them, I couldn't have possibly merited this. Thanks.
Just so everyone knows, for this business meeting, we are broadcasting it on the station, so if you have a little problem in hearing in the back, but please keep the volume down so it doesn't feed back on the system. Okay, and I'll... You're all set there.
To open, I would like to thank all of you who did come to the convention this year, and for a little update on what we're doing, I present Wayne Heinen.
Thank you. Applause. The reason I wanted to start out is to let you know that a lot of the things that we've been trying to do with publications has been bearing fruit. As promised, the logbook is a reality. I think quite a few of you have picked it up. Paul decided to reinstitute the calendar, which at one point in time was a very popular item. I talked last week with a gentleman named Fred Tankersley, who probably very few of you have heard of. Fred's in Arizona, and he began work on our new night pattern book quite some time ago. Fred has taken the time to take the former pattern book and some updates that we have received and entered it into a CAD program so that this will be computer stored from now on, so that any changes that need to be made, updates that need to be made, will be simply a matter of getting a hold of the night patterns and putting them into the files. Fred will be sending me a list, hopefully within the next week or two, of what we're missing, and we're going to attempt to get from the various stations the maps that we do need, and we are shooting for hopefully a midwinter to late winter, depending on just how long it takes us to get those patterns, release of our new pattern book. And I believe the last one was in 1983?
1980 with the update in 83.
Right, so it's been a long time coming, but Fred has worked diligently at it and has gone ahead, and when we had the change in the management, Fred decided to stick with the NRC and donate his labors to the NRC. I believe most of you have had a chance to pick up one of our new product catalogs. We have introduced some new reprints, and we will be reintroducing some more reprints. If there's anything that anyone feels that we should be offering or something that they think we may have someplace that they have seen in the past that they'd like a copy of, we are open to suggestions for things that people might want to see in the reprints. Basically, at this point, we have managed to, by switching printers twice now, my wife is a graphics artist and is familiar with print business, we have turned reprints into a profitable support for the club. And keep in mind that anything that comes out of the NRC products catalog is going directly to support the National Radio Club. So there's where the publications is. Everything that was in place prior to January is still in place. And we appreciate your support. And for some more information on the management changes, I'd like to turn it back to Ken.
Essentially, the club is in a very good financial state, all things considered. It has been a very expensive 8 months. We've put money into a lawyer, and in order to keep things flowing, we've had to put a great deal of money into phone calls and other work to bring the people together that we needed to keep it going. Hopefully, we're past the roughest spots now. We have been able to retain the commercial retailers that have handled our products in the past. They have all decided to stay with us and handle our products this year. So, I don't think we're going to have any problem selling the log. I think it's the best log that we've put out in quite some time. We had 60 or more of UNRCers who pitched in when you were asked and found local information and passed it along to us. Without your help, that log wouldn't be what it is. So we thank you all for your help and support. Basically, the club is in very good financial state. We were able to pay for the log in one shot without having to worry about it. And as in the past, your dues are all prorated, so they are covered on our bookkeeping. He's got a name for that bookkeeping method, and I'm not sure what it is.
Accrual accounting.
Accrual accounting. My accounting was simply adding and subtracting. But what his method of accounting means is that if the club should cease operations today, there would be the money set aside to reimburse any unused dues. And that method is still in force. So we are in very good financial condition. We do hope to bring out the night pattern book over the DX season. Other than that, I guess everything is going pretty good now. I do have a few presentations here I would like to make. A number of these people are not here. Wayne, on behalf of Joan Heinen, for her work on the 13th NRC AM log, and for her patience with the household disorder that the log caused.
I'll have the pictures of the living room of my house available later if anybody wants to see what that really refers to. Thank you, Ken.
And to Lori Brandenburg, also for work on the NRC's AM log, the 13th edition. And Lori is Mike's daughter-in-law.
Wayne's stepdaughter.
Okay, stepdaughter. She's a member of his household.
Yep.
And to Joshua Mannon, also for work on the log. And he is
Lori's
boyfriend. And they have put in a great deal of time.
These three people were very instrumental in the fact that the logbook was actually recreated and distributed. Without their help, we wouldn't have had a logbook this year.
A great deal of the typing, a great deal of the computer work was done by these people, and they're not members of the club.
and they were not even asked. They knew it was a big job, and they knew I had bit off a big job when we found out we had to recreate it, and they pitched in and helped so that we could have our logbook.
This one is a member, but unfortunately he couldn't be here. So, Wayne, I will ask you to take this to Jeff Tynan, again, for his hours of labor on the AM radio log.
Thank you. Jeff, by the way, we had two computers running, one every weekend, and we would transfer the database back and forth between each other from January through July, and we were working in an average probably of 8 to 10 hours each time we had it per day. And Jeff was usually doing it during the week. He's an airline pilot, and he usually flies weekends. And that's how the logbook got done.
And this gentleman, I don't see him, but I thought he was here. Paul Swearingen?
He's on the phone.
We'll catch him later then. And this one for their labors in keeping the DX audio service on track during a very trying time during 1992, to Fred and Debbie Vobey.
Thanks, Ken. And like I said at our meeting tonight, there's a lot of people that have helped out with the audio service. I kind of feel like I should be photostatting this and giving it to Connie and Phil Wayne has helped out a heck of a lot, and all the editors of the DX Audio Service. Thanks, guys.
This one also for many hours of labor on behalf of the club, and to the gentleman who has, in many respects, become my right-hand man over the last few months in trying to keep my head above water, Mr. Wayne Heinen. Yeah.
Well, there was us, and we tried, and we did it.
Well said. Well said.
Somebody beat me to this one. But for putting together a great convention, 1992, on very short notice, Bernie Wasilewski. Yeah.
Like I said before, one person cannot begin to do this. You need the help. We had, 8, 9 people helping. I want to thank someone that's not here tonight, Skip Gabelstein up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who put in a number of hours with us. He took part in our meetings for three of our meetings anyway. We had him on the telephone for an hour and a half each time, using the speakerphone. And also I videotaped the meeting. The following day I mailed the tape to him, and he was able to take part in our meeting and yet be 400 miles away. So if everyone would write Skip a postcard or a letter saying that you thank him as well as each of us for putting this on. But again, I want to thank all the help that I got. If I name someone and forget somebody, well, then it wouldn't work out. So the big old team, you pretty well know who we all are. Thank you much.
This, of course, does bring up one problem with making presentations. There are dozens of you out there that really should have some sort of a certificate of appreciation. We just didn't have enough.
to thank you all for the support that you have given us over the last few months. Now, are there any questions? We'll take questions from the floor.
What's the status of the legal situation with
Asia? I didn't hear you.
Status of the legal situation with Asia?
I guess the status is that nothing is being done at this point, and in all likelihood, nothing will. To file a lawsuit, according to our lawyer, we have plenty of legal grounds to take legal action. That takes money. We could spend thousands of dollars in a lawsuit and recover absolutely nothing. As I said earlier, our log is out. We have kept our retailers. We have over 100 advance orders for the log right now. So I believe that, you know, we're in good shape without taking legal action. I don't believe that the competition will be able to produce a market that will be worth his efforts. The legal status, as I say, is very fuzzy in the sense that we have the legal grounds to take action, but financially it is not worth it to do so. Yes?
Does the FM log need to be completely redone now also?
If we are going to put out a new FM log, it has to be started from ground zero. We have nothing. The original database Mike did not turn over to us when he resigned. So all we have is, the 91 edition. We have the printed copies. But to do anything with it, we'd have to have a volunteer that could do what Wayne has done with the AM log. And that is start with nothing and create a brand new database. I question a little as to whether it's worth it to the Cub. In 91, we had a printing of 300 logs. We sold 150 in a year's time. Now, we didn't lose on them. We made our money back, but we didn't gain anything either. As you know, this year we're handling Dr. Bruce Elving's log. This was done because it is a good product. It's there, and there was no way this year that we could do anything. Before we could even consider doing another one ourselves, we've got to have the volunteers to create that database.
Judging by the success or the sales of the last FM log, I detect some doubt as to there being a second or a new FM log. But if there is, I again would be willing to loan whatever services I could towards the new log.
Anybody that wants to discuss that further, you know, get in touch with me, and we can see where it would go. Unfortunately, for anything the size of that log, you're talking around 350 to 400 pages, and to have that printed in quantities as small as 100 or 150 is prohibitive. Either the Cub isn't going to make anything on the log, or the price would be prohibitive. That's another thing that has to be considered. We have not had good luck with the sales on that.
Have all copies of the 91 book been sold, though?
No. We only sold 150 of the 300 copies. Any other questions?
Come on, come on.
comments.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Cuba, CPC, that you got.
Also, concerning the Deja Enterprises, there's a notebook that's been floating around that has copies of Deja Enterprises releases to all of the shortwave clubs, we're assuming. The one that's in there, if you haven't seen it, you can see what... there's also a copy of Mikey's product there. Basically, Mike went to the clubs that we would nominally get publicity for our log in these various club bulletins. And at that time, the board of directors decided to address this in the same manner. I'm assuming that most of you have read the lawyer's letters that were in the August 3rd DX News. And taking that one step further, I put out a mailing. I didn't put it out. My stepdaughter put out a mailing. It's on Ken's stationery over Ken's signature by his authorization. This is going out and has gone out to everyone that we feel Mike has approached. And the basic letter I'm writing concerning a recent mailing you may have received from former National Radio Club General Manager Mike Nitter. We were unsure of his intent to publish his version of the, in quotes, AM radio log, including certain exclusive items pirated from earlier National Radio Club AM radio logs, until this recent mailing by Mr. Nitter's company, Deja Enterprises. The National Radio Club Board of Directors has decided to supply all clubs with copies of the letters that have been sent from our club lawyer and from Mr. Nitter's lawyer concerning his failure to turn over the log database and his subsequent publication using the same name as the National Radio Club AM radio log. The enclosed pages are from Volume 59, Number 28 of DX News, dated August 3, 1992. I would encourage you to make use of this information in your publication, especially if you have announced or will be announcing the Deja Enterprises AM radio log. We hope that, with your help, we can retain our publication as our own and hopefully discourage any would-be opportunists who may have a position of trust from taking similar action against any nonprofit hobby club in the future. Sincerely, Ken Chatterton. This mailing was made immediately following us receiving the information. Sean Axelrod from up in Winnipeg forwarded the one that was mailed to Amandex, and Larry Miller, who is the owner of DX Radio Supply, forwarded the one that was sent to the booksellers. Hopefully this will be used in any publication that may have or may be considering advertising the Deja Enterprises logbook, so that the public will be aware that this is going on. One of the reasons that I wanted to make sure that this was brought out is because people have seen that Deja is actively trying to market their book, and to belay all fears, because we may find ourselves listed off. I believe primarily we'll see us as the victim as opposed to the perpetrator in this case, and hopefully that this will allow us to maintain our position as the number one AM radio logbook in the world. So the publication is out. It's gone out to many radio clubs. It has gone to most of the commercial publications. It's gone to World of Radio, hopefully getting our side of the story out and getting our message to the DX hobby that basically the National Radio Club is still the owner of that AM radio log and encouraging them to purchase it from us. So hopefully that'll kind of expand. Legally, we really can't do much, but as our lawyer advised it, the more public we take it, the better we're going to be.
Thank you, Wayne. To fill you in a little bit, I've been approached by several here at the convention asking what triggered the management change in the first place. Basically, Mike's attitude toward the club was strictly commercial, not hobby. Our editor of DX News, Paul Swearingen, took the opposite tack. He wanted to present whatever information was of value to you, the members. When IRCA brought in a new CPC chairman, he had what I guess could best be called beginner's luck. He sent out about 100 letters asking for tests and got 90 or so. In turn, Wayne sent out 100 letters and got 3 responses. And Paul was forbidden flatly by Mr. Nutter to make the CPC information available. To do so, we had to give credit to IRCA. And Paul was told he could not mention IRCA in any context in our bulletin. There were several conversations, and I don't know about letters, but there were several communications between them. And Mike insisted that we were to do nothing that might support or add to the add to the coffers of IRCA. Well, that wasn't quite the way most of us saw it. We felt that if they had something that was of value to our members, that we should make it available to you, even though maybe they made a profit on it. They do have, I believe they still have, the Mexican log.
I believe the Mexican list is in its second printing.
It is, yeah. with updaters.
And that was one of the trigger points. Because they're selling it, Mike didn't want it mentioned. But it is there, and I'm sure that when they do get their second printing out, that we will be carrying publicity on it, because that is something that, to some of you, it may be worthwhile. Their almanac, we don't see as being competitive to our log. They carry different material. They carry a number of networks, I guess you would call them, that we just don't have room in our log to put in. The stations that carry, for example, Rush Limbaugh. I don't know how many there would be, but I guess they have the list.
And 504.
If you can imagine a station that might carry Rush Limbaugh, there's a newscaster that's been on
Paul Harvey.
Any number of programs of that sort. Well, any one station might carry 5 or 6 of those.
Yeah.
And there is not room in our log to list them. IRCA lists them by list. Their almanac is a supplement to our log. Or our log is a supplement to their almanac, depending on which club you're talking to. We don't see them as competition. Mike made it quite clear in talks with Paul that his philosophy was not necessarily to be better than they are, but to stomp them in the ground in the process. And that's what he tried for about 2 years. We are getting back now on a friendly and cooperative footing with them and with several other clubs where relationship had not been good over the last few years. When Mike and Paul could not reach an accommodation, basically the board of directors was told that we had to settle the matter. We did. We eliminated the position of general manager, and Mike was told that the management would now be jointly by the 5 members of the board. Among other things, this eliminates the personality cult. As an example, if I have a disagreement with Paul, I can't fire him. I have to go to the rest of the board. And I can be outvoted, whether it's 3-2 or 4-1. It's not my decision to fire Paul. It belongs to the board. So that personality cult is gone. Basically, what we told Paul, or told Mike, was that he could and we would welcome him to stay on with product development, but he would not be general manager. He, at that time, said he no longer wished to be on the board. He was at that time. And he wanted those statements in writing. At that point, we thought we had a compromise. So we gave him the statements in writing, and he promptly resigned. And that's where we stand today. Are there any other questions?
Is he still a member?
Yes. He has paid his dues. As long as he does, he's a member. The club basically is open to the public, and we cannot legally refuse to allow anyone in.
I'm sure
applications
got lost, though.
When you're old chats.
Yeah, they can be lost. So could renewals, but not when they're sent by registered mail. Any other questions? Yes. Mike.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that one of the shortwave programs that I listen to almost every weekend when I can praises your Lord very highly. Glenn Hauser's show on the radio.
Good. Must be Mr. Hauser has received some of our letters.
Mr. Hauser has received our letters.
Yes.
Have you ever thought of getting on Media Network for Radio Maryland?
Fred?
All around the world.
I didn't hear the full question there. What was it again?
Get on Media Network of Radio Maryland.
We're trying to work out something right now with them and see if we can get some more information. They're going to be put onto our distribution list for what we call the NRC Script Service. This is it's a separate little package that we put together where we get like 5 minutes of interesting topics that we feel a broadcaster or a reading service for the blind would like. We send these things out. We're going to put Jonathan Marks on the mailing list probably effective October 1.
Gary?
I was listening to when Shortwave King Ecuador is talking about the National Reading Club law, too.
Who was that?
HCJB. Yeah, HCJB was talking about it, and he exploited my show.
That's thanks to Wayne.
No, I believe it's thanks to Fred.
Fred?
Fred has been handling what's been happening, which was kind of informally ended up being set up. If the board of directors wants to send out a release, generally speaking, we do a mail merge from Colorado over Ken's signature of a printed release. The service that Fred was talking about, Fred has been doing work with the many broadcasters because of the fact that if we supply real honest-to-God audio, our chance of getting something on the air is, of course, a lot better. Basically, all the promotion and stuff that will be done by shortwave radio stations that are inclined to use this method, Fred is handling all of that information. The information that we're sending out in print generally is coming out of Colorado because I have the available computer equipment to send out mass mailings. And as you saw by the certificates of appreciation, I've got some staff typists that can turn out letters at a moment's notice. So I'll let Fred address the shortwave promotions.
And I've kind of been taking over the public relations part of the club as far as getting the information out to the different services and such. We have two basic methods. First of all is the script service, which is a five-minute feature. We try to put together enough features where a station could use it once a week, a different program once a week. However, we do have another source, and my cohort in crime and lovely wife, Debbie, just happens to have a fax machine sitting in her office. So a lot of times, this fax machine is set up on an IBM PC computer. If Wayne dumps me a message, say a CPC report, I can take that CPC report, tell the fax machine, send it to NRC people, and that thing will sit there at 2 o'clock in the morning and fax out this information to up to, I think it's 255 different people. And I figure at 2 o'clock in the morning, the phone rates are low enough. I think to put two pages to Media Network, it runs something really low, like 95 cents or something. So it's worth it to get the information out that quick.
Does that go overseas, you mean, for that low price?
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Great. Yeah, it's compression data on fax, 9600 baud.
Thanks.
Mark.
Has there been any thought to putting the publications on cassette tape, in Braille, or on computer disk?
Yes and no. After we get the convention tapes put together, After Dark number 2, the next project I've got to look forward to is looking at some of the reprints and seeing if we can put some of that onto tape. Now, a year and a half ago, in fact, going back a couple of conventions, there was some talk about possibly putting the AM radio log onto tape, onto either tape or Braille it up. At that time, Mike and myself sat down and figured out exactly what it would take to do this. First of all, we were looking to do the entire AM radio log. We were looking at approximately 28 C90 cassettes, and by the time we got done producing them and copying them off, and Mr. Starr would give us some more updates and changes to the log, the thing would be outdated and it would be hard to keep it up on tape. So then we looked at the Braille method. Again, my lovely assistant has a Brother HR40 printer system, which will take a Braille element and be able to type in Braille. That looked like it would be a feasible method until we looked at the amount of material that would need. Now, how many pages is it for the log?
Almost 450.
Okay, so 450 pages of printed log. And we figured out by going through the typeface for Braille, converting the number of characters per page, that the formula for that is 6.2. So take 450 times 6.2. I'll let Mr. Bowker do it because he's the mathematical expert in this thing. Yeah. So to put it quite bluntly, you're looking at a ton of paper to do it. And again, to run that paper, it's something like 40 seconds or so for it to Braille out per page. So it'll be a very expensive logbook. So until we can come up with some method that we can think of. Now, Wayne has been exploring something in our base.
Our base for those.
Of a possibility of some type of program that will run by itself and be able to take the data and extract it using an IBM computer. And then you, as a computer user, if you just have a speech card in your system, could be able to call up that data and do it. The thing we have to be very careful about is the fact that once we take that data and put it into any type of program or database which can be hacked into, we lose our log by the virtue of there are people very unethically which will take such a device, completely decode it, strip out National Radio Club, and then start circulating like there's no tomorrow.
Don't you also lose your copyrights? Just imagine.
Copyrights don't mean a thing in
right.
Computer hacking. You know, with modern day networks, I'll give you a case in point. There was a program on a computer bulletin board system up in Milwaukee that somebody apparently got a copy of a copyrighted business program, which was for business billing and purchasing and stuff, and uploaded this. Within 3 days, that program was on 650 bulletin board systems and had been downloaded by over 10,000 people. Now, it's damaging in that respect, but more damaging to the poor sucker who had to sit there and write this program and depends upon his income. And, you know, it's basically blown out of the water. Now, the only way they can, of course, ride herd on that is the fact that any updates to it, they have to go back to the company. But still, I mean, if we were to put out our log in any form of database, which could be hacked, you know, we might as well not even put out a log at all.
I read articles on these computer codes that even security codes are not infallible, and the article mentioned very intense high-tech security ladders or windows,
levels, and the kids just go right through them like
that. There are very sophisticated, you know, we as DXers, we grew up with radios and learned how to hack into RF and make our radios better. The kids nowadays are learning how to get into these computer systems, and they are literally, the newest scheme which is on the market right now is a little program called Hackett. And what Hackett, and what little Buddy Hackett does is you find a bulletin board. You find a bulletin board, and let's say, for example, you know that this bulletin board might be inhabited by John Bowker. So what you do is you put that name in there, and then you let it run, and what it does is it sits there and calls this bulletin board and tries a different password every time. And keeps trying to dig deeper and deeper and deeper until it finds it can get in. Then notifies that person. Once that person knows that he got in and got access, that information is then either faxed or electronically transmitted to a group of hackers, which then use the name and the password to go in and grab more information. So we have to be very careful with anything we're doing electronically, both on computer programs, databases, and as well as like on networks, transmission of that stuff. Mike.
Yeah, okay. In Miami and all over, there's recordings for the blind. But what I'm doing is when I get back to Miami, unfortunately, when I say unfortunately, I don't want to leave. Seriously, I'm going to see whether or not I'm trying to get a book on tape anyway, and I'm going to see whether or not if there's any way I can get the radio log on tape, and I'll get back to you, Fred.
Okay, again, the thing is with the tapes, we have to keep in mind the announcer time to be able to put all this material in. I don't know, I think maybe John would know from the timings of his historical moments in radio. I think if it's three and a half written pages, double spaced, is equal to 5 minutes. 15 lines a minute. Okay, so, you know, to do the log would take an incredible amount of time for the announcer to do it, plus an incredible amount of tape. And then we'd have to figure out some way of providing an updater, as well as some kind of cataloging system, because I don't think you want to fast-forward through a C90 to find one little day timer. So we'd have to figure out some method of labeling all these tapes to be able to get the information on there. Yes?
This is Lightning Mark. I was wondering if you could split the reading responsibility up between several different readers. You know, each one do, say, one different section and equals it to, say, a couple of 90-minute tapes or something like that. Also, if you can use a tone indexer for your section, then that would be the method of cataloging that the library offers as
the tone indexer would be very easy for us to do because it just so happens the tone indexer is a 25 hertz tone, which Great Northern Broadcast Company puts together automation tapes for radio stations using 25 hertz tones. So we have the equipment to be able to do that. Again, it's just the record time and the processing of putting together all the cassettes and being able to get that out in a timely manner.
Did you have a number of cassettes that you mentioned?
We figured 28. 28 at a decent read speed, which would be roughly like what John S. was talking about there as far as number of lines per second. You're talking a typical radio read, not casual.